your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
It's time to talk some football. Welcome to Jeff Nixon Sports Report with former Buffalo Bill Jeff Nixon. Get ready to participate in an intelligent discussion about the Buffalo Bills and the NFL in general. Now, here's your host, Jeff Nixon.
Hey, everybody. This is Jeff Nixon Sports Report. Thank you for joining me. My guest today is Joe DeLamalur, but I don't have him with me yet. But we're gonna be talking with him as soon as I get him on the line here. Boy, what we need to talk about a few things, especially the Super Bowl. Obviously, that's the big talk. The Pittsburgh Steelers getting their sixth Super Bowl ring. They are now the Lord of the Rings. And what an amazing game. I tell you what, I think it's probably the, if not the greatest game, Super Bowl game I've ever seen. It's right up there with the top. You know, obviously, when the Bills played the Giants in Super Bowl 25, that was a big one. We lost on the Scott Norwood field goal at the end of the game. But that, you know, that one, and obviously last year's Super Bowl game too, with the Giants beating New England, a team that was, you know, basically 19-0 going into the, you know, actually they're 18-0, and they prevented them from having a perfect season, and they just had a great game. That was a fantastic game to watch too. But this game, I just so many things had happened in it. Early on, you know, it looked like Pittsburgh had pretty good control of the game. You know, they marched right down the field on the opening possession, and they got in. You know, it looked like they were going to score a touchdown. As a matter of fact, they did initially score a touchdown until Ken Wisenhut, the coach, you know, threw his red flag down there, saying that he didn't think Ben Roethlisberger, you know, got over the goal line. And it was a smart play, too. I think a lot of people just thought it was a touchdown, but he challenged it, and it wiped out that one-yard Roethlisberger touchdown plunge, and which is interesting, too, because the last time he was in the Super Bowl, that was the first score of the game, was him running it in. So and so they did the smart thing, I think, on the very next play. They basically decided to go for the field goal at the end of that. So they, you know, it was 3-0 there early on, and the Cards basically got, you know, out of a tight pickle there, and you know, it was only 3 points. But you know, so anyway, I'm gonna open up the phones for callers right now. I have Joyce on the line. Joyce, do you have a question regarding the Super Bowl?
No, I just called to rub it in. You know, being from Pittsburgh, you were very quiet at the end of that game. You didn't think we were going to pull it off.
Well, I have to admit to the viewers, this is my wife calling, and she's a big Pittsburgh fan. She was from Pittsburgh, and you know, she was there back when you know, they had Terry Bradshaw. And
yes, we were going for 1 foot of thumb in 81.
Right, right.
And we didn't get it, but we knew that you don't count us out till the final whistle blows, and one way or another, we were going to fill up that hand, and now we have one extra.
Wow, you know, six. So does the sixth one go on their thumb, or does it go on their finger on their right or left hand?
Actually, it goes in our palm so we can reach out to the other teams who just can't manage to win a Super Bowl. We want them to have something to reach for.
Yeah, right, right.
Pretty ruthless, I know. But, you know, most people don't realize that at one time, you know, we were the city of champions. In one year, I'll never forget sitting there and smiling at my dad when we had the Stanley Cup, the World Series, and the Super Bowl.
Oh, just keep rubbing it in, yeah. Right, yeah.
But you know I really think that comes from? You know, Pittsburgh is a city of hills. People think about it being a city of rivers and bridges.
Right.
But most importantly, Pittsburgh is a city of hills. There was nowhere you could go without climbing a mountain.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is? I mean, the athletes that came in that played for the baseball team, the hockey team, the football team, they were recruited all over the United States, and these people weren't, you know, getting in shape walking those hills. Although I will say this, a lot of good football players and, you know, came out and still do come out of this, you know, the state.
You got to remember, almost all players are equal. It is the spirit of the city that supports them.
Now you're talking. I believe that. You know, there's something about the blue collar nature, and you know what? Buffalo's that way too. You know, we went to four Super Bowls, And stop laughing. Yes, we didn't win any of them, but we went there, and I don't know. I think it had something to do with the heart of the city. You know, our fans are fantastic here in Buffalo.
Yes, they are, but we were the Steel City.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, we started with Little League football in such a way.
Right.
Where it was ingrained in us, male and female. I played Little League football as a female.
Right.
And it was ingrained in us, and it's ingrained in our spirit. Now, I love Buffalo, but as far as football, the Steelers, we were proud to drop that curtain.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So let's get to the important thing for you in the Super Bowl. What was your favorite commercial?
Actually, my favorite commercial, believe it or not, is when they actually kept popping that little bear in the head. I think it was CareerBuilders.com.
Oh, right, right, right.
That was,
they just kept going. It was kind of like the 12 Days of Christmas. They would start with the one guy and go to the next image and just write down the, I think it was Career Ladders.
Yeah, and you know, it was pretty cruel, but it was funny. But I think it was a touching story to know about the young men who were both unemployed that had an opportunity to win that $1 million prize from Doritos.
Oh, yeah.
$1 million for their commercial. And just, you know, it was so unexpected what they did. Do you remember that one with the snow globe?
Oh, right, right. And he threw it at the vending machine, and then the other guy tried to duplicate him and threw it and hit his boss right in the you-know-what.
Right. Well, they interviewed those two gentlemen, and both of their wives, you know, of course wives are important, had sacrificed so that they'd have an opportunity to work on that, and they had tried, and they worked very hard, very little budget, very low budget, and they got it done.
Right.
And both of them, this will be a new career for both of them. So,
all right, well,
I'm excited.
You've bragged enough about your Pittsburgh Steelers. I got another caller on the line, and we're going to
take. So have a good show.
Yeah, thanks. You can always call back. You know, it might get
That's okay. We dropped the curtain on you. That's all you needed to know.
All right. Our next caller is Roscoe. Roscoe, how you doing out there?
Hey, how's it going, Jeff?
Good, good. What was your take on the Super Bowl? What'd you think?
Well, you know what? I tell you, I didn't think that Holmes should have got the MVP of the game.
I think he should have got it.
Because I think the play of the game was the one just before halftime.
James Harrison.
Ran that ball back.
Yeah.
Because the Cardinals, they seemed to be getting more into the game. They started getting more into the rhythm, and had Harrison not run that ball back, I think the Cardinals probably may have won that game. They would have been up ahead enough that the Steelers might not have come back.
Well, that could be true. That could be true. You know what? He did something later in the game, though, that I think might have taken him out of contention. There was
that part where the unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was just so blatant. I mean,
He should be kicked out the game.
Yeah, he could have gotten kicked out because he just kept going on this guy. That was ridiculous. I think that may have been the thing that kind of took him out of contention as, you know, for MVP of the game. But I still think Santonio Holmes, man, I've never seen a more amazing catch in the end zone than that. I mean, I've seen a lot of catches too, and that one just, I mean, it's still just amazing. I mean, it was a fabulous throw, too. You got to give it to Ben Roethlisberger. The guy just put it perfect. I mean, if it was an inch higher, an inch lower, it would have been the defense would have got it, or it would have gone over his hands. But, you know, for that, I mean, it's probably one of the greatest plays we'll ever see in a Super Bowl.
Now, even though I tell you, Tomlin, he's a fraternity brother of mine. He pledged Eta Omega Chapter, the Old Dominion. So that was kind of one of the reasons why I was supporting him, but I actually felt bad for Warner because I think he really sets the example of what a good type of player in the league. Because if you remember, he got the award at the beginning of the game for his volunteer work with.
It was the NFL Man of the Year, right? Right.
Right. And the thing is, you know, when you've been reading these articles lately, and I'm not sure which one I saw recently, where that very few of the current players contributed to the gridiron. You know, I'm thinking about Warner and how he contributes and continues to contribute. And so I got to give him kudos.
And I'll tell you what, it's interesting you brought that up because the guy that kind of got, well, the Gridiron Greats is the group that gets the money, okay? They get that donation.
Right.
You know, and it's basically for retired players that are having a hard time financially, struggling maybe with medical bills and injuries and things that have taken their toll on their finances. But Matt Burke, who plays for the Minnesota Vikings, he was also up for Man of the Year, too. That was the other other guys. He was the one that put the challenge out to all NFL players to contribute $1,000 each to a fund, to that fund for the Gridiron Greats. That was his. That was his doing, basically, you know. And so he put his money where his mouth is. He donated like $50,000 of his own money. They only got like 15 or 14 other guys from the NFL to contribute $1,000.
Fred, I saw that. That was kind of disappointing.
I'm a little disappointed. You know, these guys, I don't know. It's hard, you know, for them to understand, you know, the plight of some of the guys that, you know, were back in the hate, you know. Back in the day, that didn't have, you know, disability benefits and you know, didn't have good medical coverage and things of that nature. So, but we need to basically educate them on that. And that's something me and Joe DeLamalure and Bruce Laird from the Fourth and Goal Foundation are trying to do. And obviously, Mike Ditka through the Gridiron Greats, they're doing that too. But I would have liked to see Matt Burke get it, just because, you know, they would have given a little more.
That might be the reason why he didn't get it.
Well, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. I don't know. I think just Kurt Warner's just such a great, lovable guy, man. He does so many things, you know, and it was his year. So I'm glad he got that. He didn't get the Super Bowl trophy, but he got, you know, a thing that's probably more inspirational than that. It's the Man of the Year award, you know. I mean, they're basically saying he's the best of the best as far as what he's doing in the community for people. So, you know, that.
Let me ask you one more question. Do you think, because, you know, some people talk about, you know, the Bills and Ralph Wilson and Bruce Smith making it, but and that there'll never be a team like that again because of free agency. Do you think free agency is what's making it work to have more competitive Super Bowls? That now that there's more balance in the league.
It has definitely, I will say,
100%,
it brought more parity to the league. Teams can go from the bottom to the top so much quicker nowadays. Hey, Roscoe, stick with me. Right on the other side of this break, we'll talk some more. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame, induction of Bruce Smith and Ralph Wilson and the snubbing of Andre Reed. So when we come back, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I can. Why not?
All right, thanks, man. We'll be right back.
What is it worth it? I can't be sure. I'll go back up and before the door. You're praying in the house of faith. There ain't no winners in this game. I'm praying in the house of faith.
The opening kickoff is a beauty.
It's a fly ball deep right field. Back goes O'Neal. He's at the
shot.
Got it. With 2.8 seconds left
to left. I don't care where they put him. This one is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Show. Are you ready for some football? Well, here it comes. The Owen Hodge Show is bringing you the funniest hour in sports talk radio. This action-packed show is hosted by the outspoken fullback, Big Hodge, and the knowledgeable defensive back, Odie. This show will focus on the NFL, but touch on all things sports. Owen Hodge will provide you with a true player's perspective that'll give you insight, make you think, and definitely make you laugh. Owen Hodge have accumulated 6 championship rings. So obviously, they know things. Check out the Owen Hodge Show at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
The Owen Hodge Show.
I know, being a college freshman is supposed to be tough. But let me tell you about my schedule this semester. All 18 credits. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have American Lit at 8:05 a.m. And then I only have 15 minutes to get to my 9:15 Ethics and Value Theory class all the way across campus. Then in the afternoon, Calculus 1. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have 2 lectures that go through lunch. Sociology of Families, then Intro to Microbiology. Pre-med. And finally, I have a double lab that ends around 9 p.m. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you.
If a kid will do whatever it takes to get through college, what will you do to send her there? please support the United Negro College Fund and call 1-800-332-UNCF, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need a bitch's ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, speak up.
Speak up
or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with Jeff Nixon. It's your turn to get in on today's discussion. Call Jeff now, toll free, at 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. You can also drop an email to jeffnixon@aol.com. Now, back to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
Hey there, sports fans. Hey, we're back with Roscoe. We were talking about James Harrison and whether or not he should be maybe the MVP of the game.
Right.
I will say this. That was probably the best play ever in the history of the Super Bowl. I've never seen, you know, a player, you know, that determined to get into the end zone. I mean, and you know, he's a big guy, and there were a lot of faster guys that were running down the field trying to get him, and his own teammates were making some incredible blocks along the way. If you look at that play over and over, you just see one after another, players from Pittsburgh that were getting down there and making key blocks to get him, you know, all the way into the end zone.
But
and it was just...
I thought the fact that if you really look, because if you remember Fitzgerald, I think it was, the way he pulled them down like somebody pulls a bull down in the rodeo. I mean, if you look at it, it's like the guy's feet were like totally extended forward of his body while he was grabbing Harrison by the shoulders to pull him down.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was just, I mean, the fact that he came down, you know, I mean, if it had been a little bit, if the angles were different, a little bit, the bodies were positioned a little bit differently, his knee probably would have hit on like the 1 yard line or something. But because he pulled him over like that, he landed on top of him, and therefore he wasn't down. And the first thing that actually hit the end zone was his helmet. So that's a touchdown. I mean, you know, because the ball was, you know, basically over the line at that point too. But like I said, man, that was probably the greatest single play I've ever seen in the history of the Super Bowl. You know.
But now you had mentioned this Andre Reed snub. You thought he was snubbed?
Well, you know, let's face it. The guy's got more credentials than half the receivers that are in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you look at his statistics, and not only that, but his performance in the postseason, which is where he was, you know, shined quite a bit. You know, I mean, he didn't have the greatest games when we had Super Bowls, but he still had a lot of, you know, touchdowns. He had a lot of yards after. I mean, the biggest thing I think with Andre is his ability to get yards after the catch, what they call yak, yards after catch. And, you know, Jim Kelly's gone on record as saying he's never seen anybody better. And I will, too. I don't know if there's, you know, maybe Jerry Rice. You know, there's some other guys, Chris Carter, you know, obviously, you know, guys that can run with the ball after they catch it.
I mean, unfortunately, I don't think that Andre Reed got the benefit of the exposure of some of the other players on the Bills, whereas even though I do disagree with some of the more day-to-day management stuff of Ralph Wilson.
Yeah.
I mean, historically, if it wasn't for him, you know, there might have been two or three other teams that wouldn't exist today because he helped them along when they had tough financial times. And the Bills are the only last team from the original AFL league that are still in the same city from which they started.
Right, right. I mean, that says a lot for Ralph Wilson. I mean, you know, he's been the solid bedrock of this organization for 50 years, you know, and it's amazing that the team has stayed here. You know, we don't know what's going to happen after, you know, God forbid he passes away here soon, but, you know, you know, the guy has really just, you know, he's dedicated to the sport. And you know, and I loved him when he was an owner with the Bills. He remembered my name, which is amazing. You know, I've been out of the league for a long time, 20 years, and the guy still remembers my name. You know, and that just amazes me at his age to be able to do that, you know.
Like I said, it was a great game, Jeff, and, man, just, I mean, I don't see how they're going to top it, you know, but you never know.
Hey, that's the great thing about the NFL. You just don't know. And I'm hoping they'll have other great games. The way I look at this whole thing is, as a former player, the better the NFL does, the more revenue they take in, the more they can give to active players. The active players make the decisions about retired player pensions. So, you know, I want them to have a big pot of money to work with the next time they go into their collective bargaining agreement. And obviously it looks like that's going to be coming up a lot sooner than, you know, they had anticipated. You know, the owners have opted out of the collective bargaining agreement, and they don't like, you know, the way it's set up right now. And they although they did agree to it at one time, you know, they're now not very happy with the way things are looking for them. And so it could lead to a work stoppage. They could lock out the players. If that happens, the players, in my mind, they got all the power. I mean, they have to do is decertify the union. Then the collective bargaining agreement is null and void. Everybody becomes a free agent. There is no draft. It's just the players go to the highest bidder. And when that happens, that's going to kill the golden goose in the NFL. What will happen is you'll get, like baseball, you'll have like 10 teams that are the perennial winners of the big game, and then the other people are just also-rans, you know.
Only thing, though, it sometimes I think that because of, you know, we're older and we're wiser in our ways of understanding stuff, but these are young guys out of college, and never really have been in any real making important decision making, and that maybe they don't always see the significance of sticking it out together, that they can't just think about the dollar and think about the commitment to those who came before them. So if somehow someone can reach them and get them to understand that, then when the players come together, they will be more of a force than just picking a few off one by one.
Yeah, cool. Hey, we've got another caller on the line. Roscoe, hang around a little bit. You can listen in, and I'd love to.
I will. I'll be listening.
Yeah, cool.
Take care.
All right.
Jeff.
Tom, you on the line there?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. I have a question for you. Is there any chances of you being interested in coaching?
You know what? I got into that shortly after I left the NFL. You know, I got into coaching down, and this is amazing. I coached the very, at the greatest level that's down at the bottom there. It's the modified football team at a high school. I mean, at a middle school. Here in the Buffalo area, actually in a suburban area, and I did that for a little while, and then an opportunity came for me to coach at the University of Buffalo. It wasn't defensive backs, so I was given an opportunity to coach the running backs at the University of Buffalo. So I went there. Bill Dando was the head coach there at the time. The team was terrible. They did have a really good running back, which was kind of interesting. His name was O.J. Anderson, and he had a lot of tremendous talent, but he just didn't have desire to really, you know, get better. You know, he had all the natural talent, you know, but he just wasn't doing it. And it really bothered me, you know, and they weren't paying me much money to do it, so I eventually, you know, left that, got involved in some politics, and, and the rest is history, you know, but you know, getting back into it, I don't know. I was told by some of the coaches for the Bills at the time that if I did that, then I better be prepared to live the life of like a nomad and just be, you know, ready to travel like every 5 years to a different location. You know, because they're, you know, in the NFL and even in the college ranks, it's probably a little bit more stable in the college ranks, but in the NFL, man, it's tough to hang with the team more than 5 years.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd be a great coach for the NFL. I really do.
You know what? If I wanted to do that, I think I could be a good coach. You know, because I think I know how to motivate people, and I still love the sport, man. I love to watch it. You know, a lot of times some fans will be out and they'll come up to me and they'll say, you know, I know you probably don't like talking about football, and But, you know, and I always tell them, I say, no. Man, I love talking about football. I love everything about it, you know, and so, you know, if you have that much love of a sport, you know, then you know, it becomes part of your life, you know. But I don't think I like the idea of traveling around. You know, me and my wife like it here in Buffalo. Joyce and I are, you know, very happy here. We got a beautiful home and just a lot of friends here. You know, I got tons of friends in this area, and I just, you know, I'd hate to, you know, lose all that because I want to go travel around and be a coach, you know.
Well, maybe the Bills will pick you up. How about that?
You know what? How long do you think Dick Turan will still be a head coach here? What do you think his long-term prospects are here?
I think next year will be his last year.
I think there's a lot of people that agree with you on that. You know, he's gone 7-9, three straight seasons for the Bills, okay? Look at all the coaches that got fired this year that were, you know, like Mike Shanahan and Eric Mangini. I mean, these guys had decent records, and they had good teams that, you know, I think all of these owners nowadays think that they can just get to the Super Bowl with a quick fix. You know, I get a new head coach in here, a good head coach, boom, we're going to be there. It doesn't happen that way, I don't think, anymore. I mean, you get lucky sometimes. You know, Mike Tomlin, I'll say this about Mike. You know, a lot of people are saying that he is like the model now of the kind of coach you want in the NFL. I think indirectly what they're saying is they need more head coaches of color. You know, and, you know, let's face it, the face of the NFL has changed, you know, over the past 40 years. It's there's more African-American, you know, ball players right now. I think they can relate better to an African-American coach. And, you know, Mike Tomlin, just he gives off that type of that vibe that I think those guys like, too. Just very relaxed, confident. He just, I don't know, you look at the guy and he just doesn't seem like he gets flustered about things. But at the same time, he's got total control over his team. And you see it on the sideline. He just has that air about him. And I think, you know, a lot of the guys relate to that, and they like his energy, his enthusiasm. You know, guys like Dick Turan, you look at him on the sideline. I hate to say it, but he looks like he's, you know, the Walking Dead out there sometimes. Don't get me wrong. He might be a very intelligent coach, but does he inspire players to get excited about him? I don't know. They say they like the guy, but you know what? I didn't really play that well for coaches I liked. I played good for the ones I feared.
Well, I'll tell you, I think you'd be a hell of a coach.
Well, it's something I might look at in the future. You know, once I maybe, you know, leave, you know, the work I'm doing now. I haven't told people out there, but I currently run the Summer Youth Employment Program for the city of Buffalo, getting kids jobs. But, hey, Tom, stay on the line for a minute. We'll talk about some other things when we come back from the other side of this break. You're with the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. We'll be back in a few moments. Thanks.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Hey, football fans, are you ready for an intelligent discussion about the Buffalo Bills and the National Football League? Are you tired of listening to talk show hosts that have never played football? Instead of answering your questions, they prefer to listen to themselves. And when they don't like what you're saying, they just cut you off. Well, that won't happen on the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. Keep it clean, stay relatively calm and rational, and the discussion will flow well. Join Jeff Nixon Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, It was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
School to the pros, we cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with Jeff Nixon. It's your turn to get in on today's discussion. Call Jeff now, toll-free, at 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. You can also drop an email to jeffnixon at AOL.com. Now, back to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
Welcome back, everybody. I've got Tom on the line. We were talking about the possibility of me going back into coaching. I don't know about that, Tom. I kind of like being a critic. It's so much easier to be right when the day after the game.
Well, like he says, I think you're going to be a hell of a coach. Yeah, somebody should give you a shot.
Yeah, maybe one of these days. I don't know. Like I said, that would happen after my work here with the city of Buffalo running the summer youth employment program. So, you never know. You never know. So, what was what did you think about the game altogether?
Oh, it was excellent, excellent. The best Super Bowl in years.
I know. I love it when you see games like this because, you know, the ones that are just, you know, where another team blows them out, it's just, I don't know. I hate that. I don't think it's good for football either, you know.
I wish it would have gone into overtime. That would have been great.
That would have been interesting, you know. And, there's been discussion, too, about, whether or not they should change this this overtime rule, and I think they may do it next year because they've been doing research on it, and they're finding that the team that gets the ball first goes down and scores typically almost 50% of the time on the first drive. And what is it? How do they score? They kick a field goal. I don't know. You know what? That's not a good way to end a game. I don't think what they're proposing in the NFL, and this came up just recently. I guess the owners had some meetings and some of these things were discussed and Commissioner Goodell said that he thought it might be an interesting concept, and that is the first team that gets 6 points, you know, wins in overtime. So what does that mean? That means that the team, let's say a team gets a football, they go down on their very first possession, they kick a field goal. Okay, now the other team gets the ball, they go down and they, let's say, kick a field goal. You know, so it's 3-3. So now the other team, now you kick off to the team that originally scored, and if they go down and kick another field goal, fine, the game's over at 6. They got their 6 points, but at least both teams got possessions. What that means is, let's say you get the ball, you go down and you only kick a field goal, and then so you kick off to the other team and they take it down, and they score a touchdown on the first, you know, their first drive, they win the game. You know, because a touchdown obviously is a big impact play. I mean, it's harder to do, and it's, you know, so that team should win. So what do you think about that idea?
Well, I don't know. I don't like that idea. I would make it interesting. I would whoever scores their first touchdown, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's say you,
better than
and that holds true for that, too.
It's easier to score 3 points than it is to go with 7.
Exactly, and that's why they're saying this. They you know, if a team does, let's say they win the toss in overtime, they receive the football, they go down, and they score a touchdown, they win the game because they're the first one to get 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it wouldn't be a situation where the other team would now get a chance to get the ball and go down and score 6 points. No, but at least it wipes out the games ending by a field goal at the end. You know what I mean? Where they just go, you know, on the first drive they go down, they get to the 30-yard line, they kick the field, game's over. That wouldn't happen. You would have to score, get to 6 points total in order to win the game. So, you know, it just gives the other team an opportunity to you know, at least get receive the ball, go down the field, and score a touchdown. So, you know, and win the game. So I like that idea. I think it would be good for football. Now, obviously, if you know, both teams end up at the end of overtime just scoring 3 points each, it's a tie. You know, you call it a tie because you can't have these guys playing forever. It's just, except in the playoffs. Obviously, in the playoffs, you would need to do it because you got to have one team win and the other lose, you know.
Exactly.
So, but, yeah, anyway, there were some other things that came up during Goodell's discussions with the owners, and they, you know, he answered some of the questions, and one of them was, why did the league not suspend Plaxico Burress? And then Goodell said that it was because Burress was not a repeat offender like Chris Henry. Multiple offenses over a period of time, Goodell said, you were putting yourself in the wrong position. And that, I like that. You know, there's guys that, you know, if you get in trouble one time out there, you got to have a little leeway with them. But for the guys that are, you know, like Pac-Man Jones, mm-hmm. out there just going crazy, man, it's time to let them go, you know.
I agree.
Them, and then at some point you got to say that's it, you know. But you got to give other guys a chance. I feel bad for, you know, Plaxico. You know, the guy, you know, shot himself, you know, basically. And, you know, and it was interesting on HBO Real Sports, they did a segment on this, you know, that more and more NFL players are carrying guns now. And I understand why. Sean Taylor got killed. You know, people came into his house, you know, when he was playing for the Washington Redskins and killed him, you know, and he didn't have a gun. And so I think that a lot of the NFL players took notice on that, and they said, hey, you know, I'm not going to let this happen to me. And so they started arming themselves. And there's a guy that used to play in the NFL that gives them training on how to utilize firearms, which I think is okay. But to have to carry them in public while you're out in public, I don't know if I like that idea. I mean, these guys are making enough money. They can hire their own bodyguards. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, these guys are making good money. Now, the average salary in the NFL is about $150,000. I mean, excuse me, $1.1 million. Boy, that was a big slip. Is about $1.5 million. You know, that's the average salary. There are, guys that are making the minimum $250,000 a year, and then there's obviously guys that are making $10 million a year. But the average salary is $1.5 million. So with that kind of money, if you're going to go out at night, why not? Because, you know, let's face it, there's people out there that want to get a name for themselves saying, hey, I beat him up, or I knocked this guy down, or did, you know what I'm saying? And it just, you know, you gotta worry about that when you go out, I think. And you know, these guys are high profile. Everybody sees their face. You know, they know who they are. And so when they're out, a lot of people just, don't know how to act, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's sad but true, you know. And I think, I don't like the fact that guys have to, or I think they need guns in their homes. I understand that, but not when they go out. They can hire bodyguards, people that, you know, even that can get, you know, kind of crazy too, you know, if you're running around with bodyguards, you know. So, I don't know. It just goes with the territory, I guess, as a professional football player. So, the Hall of Fame game. I just found this out today. The Hall of Fame game next year is going to be played by the Bills and the Titans. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. You know, so when they do the induction ceremony for Joe DeLamalur and Ralph Wilson, I think on that same weekend, the Bills are going to be playing Tennessee in a preseason game, obviously. But I thought that was kind of neat to because we're going to be down there. You know, a lot of the retired players here from Buffalo, we're going to go down there. So, you know, it'll be interesting to and it's going to be August 9th. Yeah, I was trying to figure out the game time or the kickoff is going to be at 8:00 on August 9th. And so this is, let me see there, I'm reading some information about this. Buffalo has an 0-2 record all time in the Hall of Fame game with their only two appearances that came in 1974 and 1989. And the Titans, they're also 0-2 in Hall of Fame games. Hey, you know, the other thing that was interesting that I found out is that that Bruce Smith is the first defensive player from the Bills to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I didn't know that either. Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't. No.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I mean, they've got like 9 guys, I think, that have been inducted into the Hall of Fame, and and he's the first defensive guy. I thought that was kind of interesting. I'd never heard that before. But I'm just glad they're getting in. Ralph Wilson, what better guy? You know, I mean, the guy has been an owner of the same team. You know, he's never moved this team. in the history of the NFL. No other owner can say that. No other team can say that. You know that they
so far, Jeff. So far.
Yeah, so far.
That's the big worry here in Buffalo. I think he's going to sell the team. I really do. I think Buffalo's going to leave.
I'll be honest with you, I don't think he's going to sell it. I think he's just going to leave it in the hands, you know, when he passes, he's just going to leave it in that decision in the hands of people that...
And his wife is going to sell the team.
Well, you know what? They're faced with a dilemma on this thing. The dilemma is this. He purchased the team, you know, for like $100,000. I don't know, somebody said $200,000, whatever. It was small compared to the amount of money that team is appraised at now. So if he sells it, he, you know, based on the laws right now, tax laws right now, he would have to pay an estate tax on that amount. Now, estate taxes are like 30% of your, you know, of the amount of money that you, you know, would receive if that asset was, you know, became liquid. In other words, you know, so let's say the Bills can sell for $800 million. Basically, he would have the beneficiary of the team, and I'm doing this real quickly on a calculator just to if you're looking at 800 million and times 30% on there, you're looking at $240 million they would have to pay in like an estate tax to the government. Now now nobody has that. I mean, the wife doesn't have that kind of money sitting in a bank anywhere. So how do you, I've talked to some other people about it. If Ralph was to put it in some type of trust fund, there may be a way to avoid the estate tax, you know, but I'm not sure how that works. I mean, I'm not an accountant, I'm not a professional on that kind of stuff, but you know, I think he could, you know, I mean, I'd love to see him try and work out some deal where he could sell it while he's still alive, you know. Mm-hmm. But to some people here locally that have the money and the wherewithal to purchase the team, I don't think there's any one person from our region that could do it. I think it would have to be a collective thing. I know Jim Kelly has, you know, talked to some people about spearheading an effort here locally to purchase the team. But I mean, you're talking $800 million, and I think that doesn't include a franchise fee that you have to pay the NFL.
Yeah, I heard that Calisano was interested in buying it.
Yeah, I think I heard that too. The Golisano is, is interested in the team. You know, he already owns the
Buffalo Sabres.
Buffalo Sabres. So, you know, does he have the kind of money, the liquid, you know, money that he could actually pour into that? I don't know.
He's a billionaire.
Well, I don't know. It's still a lot of money. You're looking at almost $1 billion when you look at, you know, paying for the team. And then also, you know, paying the NFL franchise fee also.
Well, I just hope we don't lose our team, that's all.
Yeah, I know. Hey, we're going to go to a break, and when I come back, we got a little bit of time left to talk. And so join me after the break. Thank you. Don't even talk or use my voice. On pins and needles I do walk on. Makes all my boys say I'm too far gone. But
your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Hey, football fans, are you ready for an intelligent discussion about the Buffalo Bills and the National Football League? Are you tired of listening to talk show hosts that have never played football? Instead of answering your questions, they prefer to listen to themselves. And when they don't like what you're saying, they just cut you off. Well, that won't happen on the Jeff Nixon Sports Report. Keep it clean, stay relatively calm and rational, and the discussion will flow well. Join Jeff Nixon Monday afternoons at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Network.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Are you ready to talk sports? I mean fantasy sports. Tune in to hear the latest fantasy news, injury updates, sleepers and busts, all with a new twist from the influence of pop culture and the music industry and their newly designed game, Suicide Fantasy Football. Get ready for the Butts and Butts Fantasy Sports Show. Brothers Jim and Eric Butts are ready to clue you in on the exciting world of fantasy sports. Make sure you're a part of the new revolution in sports radio. Catch the Butts and Butts Fantasy Sports Show Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Sports Network. You can never get too much butts.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need a bitch's ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with Jeff Nixon. It's your turn to get in on today's discussion. Call Jeff now, toll free, at 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. You can also drop an email to jeffnixon at AOL.com. Now, back to the Jeff Nixon Sports Report.
Hey, welcome back. So, anyway, next August 9th, Bruce Smith and Ralph Wilson are going to be enshrined in the 2009 Hall of Fame class. So that's going to be a nice event there. And obviously, as I mentioned before the break, we're going to be playing the Titans in the Hall of Fame game there. So that's going to be a really nice event. You know, Bruce really, he said it best after he and owner Ralph Wilson were two of the six finalists selected to the 2009 Pro Football Hall of Fame. He said he was, you know, the founding father of the Buffalo Bills, and it was just a truly a special moment for him. He had tears in his eyes as they were showing the broadcast of it. You know, and he's the all-time sack leader, and Ralph is the only owner of the Buffalo Bills I've ever known. They're going to make up basically one-third of the 2009 induction class. Unfortunately, Andre didn't get in there this time. Andre Reed is a class act in himself. He'll be in there before it's all said and done in the next couple years. I think you'll see him in the class. In a way, I like it that way because he's, you know, I don't, all these guys from the Bills going in on the same, in the same year, it doesn't give us enough time to party. You know, I want to be able to party next year, the year after that, you know, and as they keep putting these guys in the hall, it'll be nice. But, they're also joined by, Bob Hayes, Randall McDaniel, Derek Thomas, and Rod Woodson. Rod Woodson, I think, man, he was like my hero when I was growing up. You know, this guy, not growing up, but when I was watching games, you know, the guy is just a tremendous, you know, defensive back. He had a great, great run in the NFL. But, you know, this is a tough thing to get into. You know, I've always wanted to get into the College Football Hall of Fame. I think I had some pretty good numbers. I'm seventh all-time in NCAA history for career interceptions at 23. But I don't even know what it takes to get in there. I don't even know who makes the votes on that kind of stuff. It was interesting. I was looking at the Hall of Fame inductees over the years. Johnny Johnson got in there, and he was an All-American the year I was an All-American, and he's a good football player. You know, he had a pretty good NFL career, but he didn't have as many interceptions as I did when I played in college football. But you know, and he played for you know, USC or UCLA. I forget which team. It was either USC or UCLA. No, Texas. I'm sorry. Johnny Johnson played for Texas, you know, big team. You know, I came from a small school, University of Richmond, so it was, you know, we played a lot of really big teams. You know, we played Georgia, we played West Virginia, we played Maryland, Wisconsin, North Carolina. We played a lot of big teams, and then we were a small, you know, a very small college, so I think that means a lot. You know, hopefully one of these days I might be able to get into the Hall of Fame, but it'll never be the NFL Hall of Fame. It'll be the College Hall of Fame. But, you know, what a great day, though. And you know, Marv Levy was there and a bunch of the other guys that you know, were played with Bruce were at the place where they, I guess he found out about it, you know, and it was just a nice little reunion. I think Daryl Talley was there, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas. So they had a lot of fun, I'm sure, and they'll have a lot of fun at the Hall of Fame game too. But going back to the Super Bowl, though, I'm gonna kind of finish up on that. You know, the Bills played in the Super Bowl four times, never won it, not one time. And a lot of people have asked me, what do you think it would take to get them back to the Super Bowl? What exactly do they need at this point to become a playoff contender and you know, vie for the Super Bowl? Really, I think it's just a couple things. You know, they played, you know, close in almost every game. The only games they got blown out in were basically, you know, and didn't play well, I think, with New England and Arizona. Arizona just put a whooping on them in Arizona. But, you know, they're just a few players away from being a really good team. They lost Aaron Chobel midway through the season. Here's a guy that, you know, just was a terror for quarterbacks. You know, he's been their sack leader on the team for many years, and, you know, without him, you could see a difference in the team. You know, and if you can't get to the quarterback and you give him more time to throw the football, your defensive backs are going to get burned. You know, that's just the way it is. I know when I played, I loved it because I had some good pass rushers. I had Ben Williams on one side, Sherman White on the other. I had Freddie Smerlis in the middle. We had Jim Haslett at one of the linebacker spots, Shane Nelson at the other spot. And they put a lot of pressure on the quarterbacks. And if you can get him to hurry the football, he's not going to make good decisions. It's going to be tougher for him, and ultimately he's going to make some bad decisions. You know, so I really like that. You know, they've got to get somebody in the draft, I think, that's either an outside linebacker or just a great defensive end that can put pressure on the quarterback. Now, a lot of people are talking, saying that they think the Bills should take a tight end. And I tell you what, not a bad choice either. You know, if they can get one of the top tight ends out of college, you know, that would help them. I think it would help them. You know, it's a shame because, you know, they had Kevin Everett. You know, they were hoping he would be the guy, and he just had a career-ending injury, and it was unfortunate. But that just wiped out an entire draft pick for them. I mean, the guy is gone, and they don't have, you know, that's a big loss to the Bills to have a guy that could have possibly had potential to be a great player in the NFL. You don't know. I mean, he was one of their first picks. So, you know, it's sad that he got injured, but, you know, that's the reality of the sport, you know. So, but if they do get a big tight end, I mean, if you look at Arizona, geez, they had two huge guys. Patrick, caught the first touchdown for Arizona Cardinals. The guy's huge, and Pope is even bigger than him. The guy, I mean, he was monstrous. I think they should have tried to throw the ball to him a little bit more. And obviously, I think they should have thrown to Larry Fitzgerald a little bit more too. But you know, the Bills we're sitting okay as far as the wide receiver. I'm just, you know, we're a little bit worried about James Hardy. You know, our second pick in the draft this past year, we had Leotis McKelvin was the number one pick, and he broke into the lineup only because there were some injuries to some of our guys, in the latter half of the season. And James Hardy, they brought him in because he was the big guy. They were, you know, the Bills haven't had a large, tall wide receiver in quite some time, and so this was the guy that they were going to bring in, and he was going to be the guy that could jump in the end zone and catch the touchdowns and make the big plays for the Bills. Well, unfortunately, he got hurt. I believe he had his I think it was his anterior cruciate got torn. And so he was, you know, he's basically in rehab right now. You know, he's had his surgery. He's rehabbing. They're hoping that the guy can come back and contribute next year. You never know with something like that. You know, I had five knee surgeries. I had a medial collateral stretch early on in my career, and then because I never got it fixed early on, I started injuring the other cruciates in my leg. I had my medial collateral, my lateral collateral, my anterior, my posterior. Eventually, after having several injuries to the knee, I had to get a total reconstruction of my knee. So, but I could never really come back from that. I tried to, you know, and I never, you know, regained the form that I had before the injury. And, you know, it's an iffy thing when you know, back in my day, especially. I mean, we didn't have the best surgeons, we didn't have the best technical procedures and medical procedures. Instead of doing that arthroscopically, they had to give me two 10-inch zippers on each side of my knee. So, you know, I was. I was laid up for quite a while there too. You know, one of the things they did back in my day, they instead of putting you in like one of those soft casts and then letting you out in, you know, like a week or so, they had me in a hard cast for 8 weeks. So anyway, you know, we'll talk some more about injuries and stuff. We're going to be talking about the disability plan on my next show. I'm going to have my special guest will be Dave Pear. So thanks for joining me, and we'll see you next Monday.
On pins and needles I do walk on. Makes all my boys say I'm too far gone. But here's a word that I can't be sure. I'll go back up and get for the door. I'm in the house of pain.
Thanks again for participating in an engaging discussion of football on the Jeff Nixon Sports Report with former Buffalo Bill Jeff Nixon. Join us again next Monday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific on the Voice America Sports Network. In the house of pain.